Like to call the regular meeting of the Lakewood Town Council, August 12, 2014. If we please all rise for invocation and pledge of allegiance.
Let us pray. God, we thank you for this summer and good weather, along with the blessings of visitors who have come here. We come tonight asking for your guidance, wisdom, and support. Grant us your grace, Lord God, as we make decisions that may affect those who live, work, and also visit this town. We especially pray for safety, peace, and blessings on this community. We ask all these things in your name. Amen. Amen.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you all. Item number four, the approving of the agenda.
Mr. Mayor, I have two suggestions, recommendations. The last item on the agenda, item 10J, discussion of costs related to an actuated flasher at crosswalks. That is an error. That's not a Lake Lure item. We had some email crosstalk with Rufferton, and that's their item. So we can remove that. And then I propose adding J, a discussion on a resolution that the town attorney has prepared and brought forward modifying the deed for the school property, and he will provide more explanation on that at that point in the agenda.
Okay.
I have a suggestion as well. I'd like to move consent agenda item D to new business, I guess we could say, item K. And
which letter was that?
D, item D.
Okay.
About the work truck and the police vehicle. And let's see, I'd like to add one more item, just a very brief discussion on the voting, getting a voting location up here. I want us to talk about re-upping or resubmitting our letter to the Board of Elections. That would be very brief. Okay. Or for maybe a polling place would be a good. And
okay, one other thing that if it's agreeable to the, I'd like to move F and G to the consent agenda if no one has an objection to that. Mm-hmm. One has to do with the town personnel rules. I think that's they're pretty clear and concise. And then the closing down of the road, transferring that road over, I think that one's pretty obvious as well.
I have some questions about F, and okay. I think it would be a very brief discussion.
Okay,
I think it would be
fine.
Good to leave them.
Okay.
Leave them where they are.
Yeah.
And we've got, I noticed we have some of our consultants here that we have talked with who traveled up from Greenville. I think it might be good if we could maybe move I further up the list in case we had questions for them, then they could get on back to Greenville. Maybe put it, maybe move it, exchange it with either A or B. Maybe move to exchange it with A.
Well, yeah, why don't I just make it the first item under 10?
Yeah, make it the first one. So I would be A, and A would be I.
Can we keep A second so that our staff doesn't have to
stay
for
the only reason I said that was because it changed all the rest of them. Yeah, we can make it second. That's fine.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay, do you have those modifications? Do you have that note? Those modifications, do I hear a motion to accept the agenda as modified?
I'll make that motion that we accept it as modified.
Okay, any further discussion? Hearing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
It's unanimous. The public forum, we have one person, Fran Nord. Fran, would you come forward?
Good evening.
Hi.
came back this evening to find out how the road situation on Boys Camp Road is, and I brought you four more signatures for the...
Okay, I'll take those.
And I'll take them.
Okay. Chris, you have an update?
Yeah, in my report.
Okay. Well, can we wait to the report? Okay. And then if you wanted to address after that, I'll let you come up again. Okay?
Okay.
All righty. There's no one else listed here. Would anybody else like to speak before we move on? Seeing no hands, let's move on. The reports at this point in time, Chris?
Okay. Well, we have a very full agenda this evening. We've had a very busy month of July, and August is following that model. What used to be a two-page report to council has now hit four pages, just an indication of how much work is going on. The first item is a couple of carryover items from the last meeting that we had in July. We've confirmed there was a question about logging trucks in the area. We have confirmed that there is no exemption for logging trucks. There's a general prohibition on any of the 18-wheeler size trucks traveling through here unless they are originating or depositing their load in Lake Lure. They're prohibited from using the area. So our police have stepped up enforcement of logging trucks, and we encourage the town, if anybody sees any trucks continuing to come through here, if they can, you know, get the name on the side of the truck and just call it into our police force, we will increase enforcement on that. Boys Camp Road, we've done two things. There was a report and an assessment and a cost estimate done in the year 2000 of work recommended on Boys Camp Road. Some of that work was done by the councils in the past. Some of that has not been done, but those estimates are 14 years old. We've engaged with the firm of J.M. Teague Traffic Engineering to come down this month to do an end-to-end survey assessment and itemized list of recommendations and cost estimates. That will come back to the council, and we at that time will talk about priorities and budget availability and put together a plan for addressing everything from soup to nuts on that road: striping, paving, shoulders, guardrails, end to end. So that is in progress. Going around the departments, the golf course had a very good July, continued to have rain, but on the big weekends where they needed it, it was dry. The 4th of July was their second largest play day on record. Through July, they have hit 49 members for the year, which is one short of their goal of 50. Overall, their rounds are about 12% ahead of where they were last year. Last year was a very tough year for them, so it's good to see. The police had lots of activities in July. Most notably, they started to get more calls to the Geneva Tiki Bar, including an incident there involving weapons that were brandished with the officers. So fortunately, everybody was safe, but it's a reminder of our staff to really be vigilant at all times. In police news, there's an event that's scheduled. It's going out through our flyers and our email newsletters. August 15th, this week, 9 to 11 right here in this room, is Coffee with a Cop. That is a national program in communities where, on a periodic basis, we get members of the police force together, have coffee and donuts with anybody from the citizens, from the community that would like to come in and just kind of get to know our police force and our policing philosophy. And it's an opportunity to hear what are the concerns of the citizens and just start a dialogue there. So this will be the first that we do, and we hope that it is successful and well attended, and we'll continue to do more throughout the year. The fire department, most notably, they responded to a gas explosion on Proctor Road. It was likely due to a lightning strike that caused significant damage to a house, to a car, and to property. They had an increase in the number of fire, rescue, and EMS calls, as well as a significant amount of training during the month. The Community Development Department is working on a number of active planning projects, some of which you'll hear about tonight, but they're working mainly on the Main Street Master Plan, the Rocky Broad Western Gateway Plan, the Flowering Bridge Site Plan, and the Small Area Plan around the intersection of NC9 and Memorial Highway. There are four abandoned and dilapidated structures cases that are open, and in your report you have details of where each of those cases stand. One of them is coming before you on the agenda tonight. Their department also produced a really good comprehensive recap of their activities, their staffing, how their workload has evolved over the last 5 years, and I hope that's helpful to the various boards that they support. In lake operations, there was 102 hours of lake patrol in the month of July. That team has worked on a couple of projects. The dredging project management team has now begun work on their plans and their preparations for the winter dredging activities in the River Channel, the Marina, and at Rumbling Ball Resort. They have a team that consists of some members of the Lake Advisory Board, some citizens in the community, all working on their dredging plans. They have also worked with the Parks and Recreation Board and the Lake Advisory Board to install aeration bubblers outside of the beach area. So some people may have seen these. They're not terribly noticeable, but you can see six locations just outside the roped area of the beach where you can see little bubbles. That is a strategy aimed at aerating, oxygenating the water, and combating the rise of bacteria growth that we see typically in lakes during the hot summer months where you don't have a lot of water flow, and it's particularly important where you have a swimming beach. So that's a strategy that those boards are watching carefully to see if they get results. In our engineering and capital projects, the dam roadway renovation, the asphalt repairs, and the new concrete driveway is complete, and final paving will occur around the midpoint of this month. And the Luremont water system improvements, that work is also nearly complete and should be finished by the middle of this month. In the Public Works Department has been working quite a bit with our contractors on that waterline project in the Asa Gray and Washburn Road area. Still working on that this week, including the replacement of a 30-inch culvert underneath Washburn Road. In finance, we have just about closed out the final books for last year that was ended at the end of June. All of the expenditures and the revenues are in place. It won't be officially closed out until our auditors issue their statements and reports in the October-November timeframe. But we do have, with a high degree of confidence, an idea of how we have finished our year against our budget. In the general fund, we finished with a surplus of $204,000. In the hydroelectric fund, we had a surplus of nearly $300,000, principally due to increased rain and revenue generation at the hydro plant. Our general fund surplus revenues ran positively ahead of our plan, and then planned expenditures across all town departments ran about 3 to 4% under what was budgeted. So we're pleased to be able to deliver those surpluses back into those funds. Our water and sewer fund had a shortfall of about $6,000, which we anticipated, knowing and projecting where our revenues were going to be based on our water and sewer rates, which is why you have a study and a set of recommendations around rates to come to you tonight. Lastly, in the general area of communication to the community, branding and economic development, a number of really positive things to note if people aren't aware of them and haven't seen them around town. We've hung a new town seal on the front of the town hall building that matches this one here. We have facilitated a discussion meeting, the first of a number of meetings, between the Chamber of Commerce, local businesses, the police department, and a town commissioner to talk about the impacts of motorcycle noise and the different approaches to improving the situation in town while also continuing to be welcoming to motorcycles that aren't a problem from a noise standpoint. Cycle North Carolina, the bicycling event that was held here recently, was very successful. There were over 400 riders in town for the weekend. They filled area hotels and restaurants and had rave reviews about the scenic beauty and the hospitality of our area. So the intent and the hope was that we will be able to make that an annual event with the Cycle North Carolina organization. And we're awaiting word from them whether it was successful for them and they will bring this back on an annual basis. We took that opportunity to reinforce our branding and get the Chimney Rock and Lake Lure brand out and in the hands of all the cyclists and the guests so that they continue to keep us in mind. We have secured a new athletic event and competition to the community, and this was really exciting because it occurs well into our shoulder season and our winter season. So on Saturday, December 13th, we will have a new rock climbing bouldering competition up at the Rumbling Bald cliffs, the base of the cliffs, in the bouldering area off of Boys Camp Road. It is part of a series of competitions that have been held for well over a decade in North Carolina, Georgia, and Alabama. And they're really excited to add a new venue here in Lake Lure at Rumbling Bald. They estimate between 600 and 1,000 competitors and spectators will come in on a weekend and Saturday in early December where there's typically not a lot going on. So the Chamber and the town are really excited in partnering with the organizers of this event to roll out the red carpet and to really host all these folks in a way that will encourage them to keep coming back and to take advantage of local restaurants and lodging properties and tent camping and all that we have to offer. Buffalo Creek Park for mountain biking and hiking in the month of July saw 1,100 visitors on the trails up there, so that continues to be a sought-after amenity. The Chamber of Commerce is making very good progress in their efforts to recruit a bank to town and to recruit assisted and continuing care facilities to town. So we're continuing to attend meetings that they have arranged and scheduled, trying to get success in both of those recruiting activities. There's a new website in town that's an informational site on activities, events, schedules, and news of town. It's called GoLakeLure.com. I encourage everybody to visit it, frequent it, check in there daily, and encourage others around town to do that. They're just starting to launch a more widespread promotional campaign, and really the whole intent of that is to be a go-to clearinghouse site for news. If any organizations want to get news and events promoted on that site, it's very easy to do. They can just go to GoLakeLure.com and there's information about how to provide your content on that site. Our new community health clinic, MAHEC, is targeting a grand opening of their new facility next to Ingalls in late September. School construction plans were approved by the town, and groundbreaking is targeted for late September, early October. And lastly, if you haven't noticed, the building across the street has been renovated and reopened as the Lake Lure Gateway Center. They're utilizing our new community branding. It looks fantastic, and it's already a new home for several local businesses. So continued positive energy and momentum in the local economy. That's it for my report.
Thank you, Chris. Fran, did you have something you wanted to add?
No, not at this time.
Okay.
When you get your report back, I'll be here.
Okay, very good. Thank you. Diane?
kind of, that was a great report you gave too. And just to follow up on the Buffalo Creek Park.
Put your mic down.
Okay, the August the 7th Parks and Recreation Board meeting. Buffalo Creek Park has been really successful, and as Chris said, 1,100 visitors, 20% of those were mountain bikers during the month of July. It just keeps increasing. And we've got a counter system there, and that's how we know that we are having this many people utilize the trail. And as I said, that is a very successful trail at this time. And there's still a remaining phase one to get accomplished, which will be underway soon. And then we're going to have phase two, which will continue the trail on to Eagle Rock. And that will give us about a 5-mile trek. The aeration system, as Chris said too, the aerators have been installed. They were installed in July. And if you've been down there or been by the lake, you've probably seen little bubbles coming up in the water. And this has been an issue too regarding the dredging. They were concerned about whether that would cause a problem, and they're just talking about removing the aerators themselves so that this would not create a problem. But in order to determine whether these aerators are being effective or not, it's going to take probably about another month of reports coming in to determine what levels the bacteria have been reduced, etc. And also, let's see here, Cycle North Carolina, as Chris said, excellent weather, fun. I don't know how many of you came down here, but I had a great group of people here, and they all did seem excited. And looked like half of them was camped out here in their tents out in the Morris Park area and having a good time. As a matter of fact, there were so many people that one of the people had to go as far as Forest City to find lodging. So that shows that there is some excitement and the need for more hotels and things like that here in Lake Lure to keep a captive audience, so to speak. Let's see what else. Also, the Olympiad, you know, is this coming weekend, starts Friday. I've been rumbling ball for the most part. There's going to be some great food this year, they say, and at the end of the event on Sunday, they're going to have, after the race to the rock, they're going to have a rally in, at the gathering place up in Chimney Rock, and they will be awarding the prizes at that time. And there's approximately 800 participants this year, and this is our 10th annual Olympiad. So if you get the opportunity to come out and participate or even volunteer, they're always looking for volunteers. And the last item, dredging. As Chris had said too, the lake will be lowered this winter, and the excavation dredging will occur at that time. And most of that will be up at Rumley Ball and in some of the other coves, and then also in the river out to the silt shelf. So we're trying to get the sediment removed. The hydro dredging will occur following the rising of the lake level, and that will probably be in March. And that's about all I have. Thank you.
Good. Thank you, Di.
At the request of the Lake Lure Classical Academy, the June meeting of the Zoning and Planning Board was a joint meeting with Town Council to facilitate an accelerated approval of the Lake Lure Classical Academy development plans. Those that attended included the LLCA development team as well as the Town of Lake Lure Development Review Committee. Of course, it was Town Council there as well as the Zoning and Planning Board. Most of the discussions centered on the new building's facade and the quality control at the manufacturing facility in Georgia, where the school will be built in sections and transported to the site in Lake Lure. The plans were approved on unanimous vote. Mr. Baldwin briefed the Zoning and Planning Board on a report concerning microbreweries, and ordinance is being prepared for review by the board and at their August meeting. And Mr. Baldwin also made a presentation concerning transportation resolution, which was approved by the Zoning and Planning Board for presentation to Town Council. That's it.
Thank you. Mary Ann?
First of all, the Lake Advisory Board met last week, and Gary Hassenfoss reported that the black bass population continues to develop as part of the plan for fishery, and the stocking of walleye, which had been suggested and discussed, is not part of their plan at this time, but their direction has been outlined through the fishery studies to continue to provide feeder fish for the bass, as the bass population is overpopulated and has a short supply of feeder fish. So that's moving in a good direction, and I'm hearing good reports from the fishermen. There was considerable discussion with Donnie, our dam operator present, of the standard operating procedure in response to some phone calls and anonymous notes that had been left complaining about the lake level and difficulty in getting boats out of boathouses and so forth. Generally, from those members who regularly monitor the lake level at their own boathouses, they had seen it remain pretty much within a 4-inch range. Donnie explained that keeping the lake at 990 is ideal, but you can't hold it there under all weather conditions. And often it's beneficial to lower it slightly when a heavy rain is anticipated in order to avoid flooding and having to resort to floodgates and so forth. So after the discussion and review of the standard operating procedures at the dam, the board agreed to recommend continuing with the process that's being used at the dam. And also felt that some of the silt issues that are being addressed by dredging, as well as individual boathouse issues, may take care of some of the anticipated problems. There was also discussion regarding some confusion or what was felt to be not clear regulations in the lake structure regulations. And after a discussion of that, Clint and Gary Johnson agreed to work with Blaine Cox and Stephen Webb to create any proposed revisions to the lake structures ordinance and report that later. There was some discussion, or considerable discussion, of a possible mailing about the dredging. There's concern that people need to be informed, not just the lakefront owners, but everyone in all of our taxpayers, all of our people who are paying for the dredging through their taxes. They felt that some of the things they want to have included would be who to contact, what you can do for those lakefront owners who may want to do some personal dredging or wall repairs or placing of riprap, because there are, depending on what work might be done, construction or renovation or improvements along the shoreline, the permits that the town has can be used to cover many of those things, so that individuals don't have to get individual permits, but they do need to work with Clint in doing what is needed to be covered by our permit for the town. They talked about emailing the letter and other things that I'm sure as the time draws nearer and there is a draft or more discussion to keep people informed. The lake level will, the plan is to drop it December 1st, and how fast it drops depends on the weather, and then to start it back up at the end of February, and how quickly it rises also depends on the weather, because it can take weeks if there's no rain, or it can come up overnight if there's a significant rain. So we'll be working and planning for that. There was another discussion regarding non-motorized boat traffic and safety. It was noted that it seemed there was less motorized traffic on the lake this summer, particularly on weekdays, than had been in the past. And there was no recommendation for any changes at this time. At the last school board meeting, test scores had come back, and the scores were generally very excellent and showed significant gains. There is a new school board member, Carol Pritchett, who was introduced, who replaces Melinda Morse, who recently resigned. And already heard about the plans being approved and planning a groundbreaking for the school very soon. The other meeting that I have to report is the ABC board. Sales are up. They are looking at possible renovations to increase the sales floor space and increase options for customers. And as I reported last month, there are some changes on the state level coming down that allow for sales of wines, and this is going to increase and call for a need for more space for on the sales floor. And there was to be another final distribution to the town of $2,000 from their profits. And the bank totals for the ABC store are currently $126,174.
Pretty good, Marianne.
Bob?
One thing to add with Marianne's, on those applications for the riprap or dredging, if I'm correct, those applications have to be in to Clint by the end of September. Is that correct? So if anyone thinks that they're going to need a permit, please get done prior to the end of September to Clint. We had the July Board of Adjustments meeting that had two vacation rental cases on it. Both those were approved. Then we had a Lake Structures Advisory Board meeting. There was a case there that had been going on for 9 months, and they withdrew that case and have to start over. So those are the reports I have.
Okay. Thank you. Moving on to item number 8, the consent agenda. Do I hear a motion to approve it with item number D moved to 10I?
I'll make that motion as approved with that notation.
Motion made by Bob. Do I hear a second?
Second.
Second by Diane. Any comments? All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
It's unanimous. Okay. Moving on to item number 10. And we moved 10I up to the beginning, so we want a discussion of management consultant proposals as the first item under 10.
I think we all remember we talked about this during our budget meeting and agreed at the time that it would be a good idea to have a an evaluation similar to what was done at Rumlin Ball Resort. They saved, I think it was about over $80,000 a year over there with some changes in procedure and so forth. And Bob Cameron and I met with the folks who did that work. They're here and our representative from their company's here tonight. And I think it's an excellent idea. They gave what looks appears to be a very good price. It was $5,200 plus actual expenses coming back and forth. So you can say something less than $6,000 altogether. We finished last year with a with over $35,000 left in our contingency budget that we didn't use. So I think the potential for savings greatly outweighs the cost for this, and it's my recommendation that we hire this group and get our report and see where we can if there's opportunities for some more efficiencies.
Okay, anybody else have any comments? There are two proposals on the table right now, and I think we should open up the discussion to that. Even though it's a small amount of money and the potential might be great, witnessing what Chris has done with his staff over the last 4 years, 5 years, I think, I'm not sure how much would be gained. And even though we have excess money in some of our accounts, I hope it's we can agree to disagree, but I don't think it would be a good use of funds, to be honest with you.
Well, if I can say, if we're going to discuss this, we definitely need to hear and discuss both proposals. I was concerned when this was brought up at our last meeting and not on the agenda that these folks would be doing this and reporting to town council and not our town manager, because our town manager is a whiz in my estimation, and the years that I have worked with him and seen what he's done to streamline our town operations and looking at the budget over the last 5 to 6 years that I have been very closely involved, we have actually seen our town manager propose and be creative in helping people who were close to retirement to retire, to move people from one position to another without adding more personnel. And we've seen our staff really cut their budgets. Every year they have been asked to cut and cut again, and they have done so. To put things in perspective, I ran into a gentleman on the other side of the mountain last week who is running for sheriff in a neighboring county, who was telling me about their sheriff's department and the incumbent having increased their budget in the last 10 years from $17 million to double it to $35 million. And I said, holy moly, our entire budget's only $5 million. Now, to me, that's a situation where you can bet that somebody looking at that and how that budget doubled in that length of time would have some good recommendations. But as far as the town of Lake Lure and our budget and our staff, I think our town manager is as capable and probably could moonlight doing consulting for other governments to help them do what we have done. I really don't feel that at this time when we're trying to rob Peter to pay Paul to do our dredging for the next 10 years, that this is an area that we need to spend money on. That's the way I feel about it.
Well, I'll mention one thing, two points. One is that the other proposal that we had was for $27,000 and included a lot of stuff that I agree with you. I see absolutely no use for. So as far as I'm concerned, I have no support for the second proposal. On top of that, I got a very interesting article. Actually, Chris sent it to me today from and it has some quotes in here. I certainly won't read the whole thing, but some of it is very pertinent. So the North Carolina State Auditor, Beth Wood, said that it's a huge mess, that there was a problem with in a city government down in Tarboro, and there was and her comments were there's a huge message to cities and councils that their board members, their commissioners, their city council members are watching their operations. Wood said these are the things that council members should have their arms around. Wood insisted that town council boards or commissioners, school boards, must take an active role in overseeing their professional staff's performance. So that comes from the highest levels of state government. So I would disagree that what we're doing as a town council by asking for this report is out of bounds by any
stretch. Well, again, you didn't tell the whole story on that email. I got it also that they had uncovered wrongdoing that had been going on for 10 years. In fact, the town manager that was taking money for one thing and spending it on other things, and it was a nightmare story of what was going on in that town. He had since retired, and they're looking at how to make some of these people who benefited from their misappropriations pay back some of this to the town. That is not happening here. We have annual audits. We have open discussions. We have absolute open budget sessions with every fund being disclosed to the public. Put on the website.
Let me say one thing. First of all, it's not personal. We know Chris does an outstanding job. I've told him personally, and I tell everybody here, there's no better town manager anywhere on earth. I'll say that. What it's doing is what we've also discussed, just like we do our budget meetings, is testing the different positions and offices. It's not personal. This is about positions. When you manage, you don't manage to worry about the personnel. You want to give them the best benefits possible with the best people. But your intent here is to test the positions. This is strictly a review of the positions within administration. We've had a discussion with Chris on it, and it's strictly to say, is there one of those positions that is not necessary for our government to run just as well, that we could take that money and do other projects or other things with? So I want to take the personality out of this, because there's nobody here that doesn't support Chris 100%.
Exactly.
And that's the first issue. But I want to say another thing is, other companies and large companies do the same thing. I used to have 95 employees with a budget equal to this town's budget. I hired consultants to come in and check my decision making, because you get so close to it sometimes you're too busy, and it's nice to get a fresh set of eyes and ears. And yes, I got corrected once or twice and said, hey, you need to change this or go a different direction. Mm-hmm. For the amount of money, the small amount, this is strictly a test positions, just like we did during the budget process. We took positions that we knew were productive. However, we still ran them and tested them to make sure that they were still necessary. And they were, and they're still there. But there's nothing wrong with checks and balances once in a while and getting a fresh set of eyes for a reasonable amount of money and get a basic report, and that's all we're asking for. We're not going after anyone personally. We're strictly having a fresh set of eyes, that hopefully this is an asset to Chris. You know, hopefully it's an asset. There's no penalty involved.
Yeah, as I ran my business, we did the same thing. Occasionally, you need a fresh set of eyes. You get close to a situation, and a fresh set of eyes comes in and sees things that you almost slap your head. So why didn't I think of this? And that's what this is about. And to the article that I was quoting from here, I purposely didn't go into the mismanagement by the town manager because I didn't want that comparison to be made. I think Chris has done an excellent job. But that doesn't mean that we shouldn't have this tool available. And the main thing that I got out of this article was when, there had been some disagreement over what the council's role was here. And I do it. I mentioned what she said to reiterate that the council does have a role. We're not here, as I said during the budget meetings, to rubber stamp anything coming from the town. We're the leaders. We're the elected body that reports directly to the town. And I'll read one more time. Wood insisted, and this is the North Carolina State Auditor, Wood insisted that town councils, boards, commissioners, school boards must take an active role in overseeing their professional staff's performance. Well, that goes hand in glove with what I'm talking about. That's exactly what we're doing here. We're taking an active role in overseeing the performance at a very minimal cost.
I'd just like to make one statement since the rest have been talking too. I totally support Chris. I think he is an absolutely fantastic city manager. He is so knowledgeable and he can just get things done. And he has done so much already to cut. This action here, as Bob was saying too, is just kind of a checks and balances. It's nothing against Chris at all. It might come up where it shows him that, I mean, nobody could do it better. And that would be a really good thing for you too. But it doesn't hurt. It doesn't hurt to have a check.
It's spending money, though. It's spending money.
It is spending money, yes.
Bob, you had 95 people. I worked for a company that had 350,000, and they could knock out 40,000 with a study like that. We only have a small staff. And I'm here every single day, and I watch every single thing that happens. And I just say that that's my judgment from that article, because I'm here every single day. I talk to the people every single day, and I feel like I've done due diligence on that. Again, it's only $5,000, or maybe it'll end up about $8,000.
$6,000.
It's not that much, but I just think it's a
waste. I understand your point, and you are here every day, and the rest of us aren't. I think it's an excellent idea. It was used by the resort, which is about half of the citizens in this town, that saw fit to bring these folks in and do it up at Rum and Ball Resort, save them over $80,000 a year. I'll make a motion that we go with this proposal.
And I'll second it. Motion made by John, seconded by Bob. Is there any further discussion?
I just think the money can be better spent. I see people in the room shaking their heads, and I regret that they didn't have an opportunity to speak, but I think the money can be better spent in our town.
I'd like to ask a question of Chris, please. Mm-hmm. Chris, could you tell me, give me your opinion, do you feel that this is a necessary step here for us? Or, because I know you work very diligently to save money for the town, to cut back, to do everything you can. So do you think this will help us? So,
well, I conveyed a couple of my thoughts in a memo to the council about this, and so I'll reiterate some of those here tonight. I spent 20 years of my career in management consulting and business consulting before coming here in local government, so I'm a big fan of that kind of expertise, that kind of independent, objective work when you can afford it and when you know what you're getting. I have been impressed by both of these firms. I have no doubt that we will learn something and get some perspectives that we don't normally get because we're so focused on a day-to-day basis. As a manager, I'm happy to have all the help that I can get in other areas. I depend on engineers providing consulting. I depend on attorneys to come in and provide expertise. So, yeah, I'm not going to turn down this kind of consulting work if the council wants to fund it. We'll put it to good use. I want to make sure that the council knows what they're getting, and in this particular proposal, it is just an analysis of the administration department, which has 6 people in it. So we have 33 full-time positions in town, and this won't give us insight into other departments and other positions. If the council is happy with this first piece of work, then they can opt to continue to invest in this kind of outside look at other departments. But the administration is a place to start. Lastly, in terms of the cost of this, my recommendation to the council is, given the consistently good performance from a budget standpoint and cost cutting that all of our staff have really worked hard to deliver, as a manager, I would hope that the council in turn reinvests some of that savings back into our staff in performance bonuses, in salary increases that have been deferred for a while. I think the first place that you have to kind of show that reward and that investment is to the staff that delivered those results to you. After that is done, then I think anything that we can also afford from a consulting standpoint, as you say, certainly can hurt and may help. But I would urge us, and we're going to talk about this more over the next couple of weeks, and I've got some proposals coming to council, but my main concern is that we first take care of the staff that we have, and then look at efficiencies and positions.
And if I may note, from what I just heard, the relatively $6,000 to study 6 staff members is $1,000 per person. We're spending just to see if they're giving us their money's worth. I think it would be better spent in bonuses for people who are giving over and above and saving this town money that they've been saving this town year after year.
And I'll again say for one more time, it's not about the people and performance, it's strictly the positions. Thank you.
Okay, motion made by John. Second by Bob. Is there any further discussion? Mm-hmm. Hearing none, all in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Did I hear 2? You said aye? No. All against?
No.
Say no? It's 2-2. I break the, I will vote no and leave it at that. So, let the record show that there were 2 yes and 3 no. Moving on. Item 10A, consider adoption of ordinance number 14-08-12, directing the code enforcement officer to remove or demolish the structure at 159 Johnson Circle, Rutherford County Tax Pin 163-1235, file number ASUD-201-4001, described as unfit for human habitation, and directing that a notice be placed thereon that the same may not be occupied. Is there any comments?
Sheila,
I'm sorry. I heard a couple heads go up. Go ahead, Sheila. Sorry.
So there's a memo in your packet, the proposed ordinance is in your packet. As the memo states, this is an ongoing case. It's been on the town's radar for several years. It reached the final stages where findings of fact and order was issued, and then it came out that it was discovered that there was a party in interest that wasn't notified, it's a state law. but you have to notify all parties of interest, so kind of had to step back a little bit, and that's when it was turned over to our department, and so we just decided to hold another hearing. Nobody showed up again, but we have notified the property owner. They signed the further letters. We know that they've been notified. Do you have any more questions?
I do. At what cost do you estimate demolition of this property?
I'm sorry, I couldn't hear you.
At what cost will it be, do you think? The reason I'm asking, it seems like, depending on the structure itself, and I don't know if a town does this, have a controlled burn by the fire department, go out and burn it down, then you wouldn't have the cost of a consultant or somebody coming and looking at it and say, well, I think it needs to be done this way or this way, and then having to pay to have it demolished. When, but say, I don't know the ordinance if we could have it covered by a burn.
Once the town has the authority to take that structure down, uh-huh, then we can start looking into the most cost-effective ways, okay, to go about that. The first thing we have to do, and it is, again, a state requirement, is we have to have an asbestos inspection. Okay. So having that will also help determine what would you allow to do, because if there's asbestos in the house at all,
yeah,
then that
can. Yeah, yeah.
But that is an option that the town will look at, but we can't look at any of those options
until that.
We actually have the authority to set them in there.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, any other questions or comments? If not, could I hear a motion?
I'll make the motion. We consider go ahead and adopt the ordinance for 159 Johnson Circle.
Do I hear a second?
Second.
Second by Diane. Any further discussion? Hearing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
It's unanimous. Okay, item number 10B, water rate presentation.
All right, you have a packet that hopefully you've had a couple of days to look at. In last year's budget workshop, we talked about a water rate increase to have sufficient revenues to cover the costs. That was then subsequently not approved and implemented by town council. In the budget session that we just concluded for a second time, we talked again about water, the cost of our water system not being borne by the revenues. We made a recommendation of a contracting with a consultant to do a sewer study, and what we've done is kind of a blend. Our in-house finance team of Sam and Thad have done most of the legwork, and they have drawn upon the expertise of Mr. Harlow Brown of Brown Consultants, who has worked in water and sewer rates in a number of municipalities in the area. And what they have is a study, a report, a set of observations of our current state, and a set of recommendations of several different scenarios, all of which would be changes, increases in our water and sewer rates. And you can see those different scenarios have different impacts on different kinds of water users. And so it really gives a question back to council about, well, philosophically, what are your objectives and your aims with your water rates? You can, with water rates, you can encourage or reward water conservation. You can encourage economic development and the use of businesses that use a lot of water. You can shift costs principally between your small individual residential water customers versus commercial businesses or vice versa. You can treat everybody exactly the same. So with the basis of that, I'd like to invite Sam and or Harlow or Thad to come and answer any questions that you may have, and together we'll walk you through kind of some of the salient points in this presentation. If you guys want to come up to the microphone in case there are questions here, kind of some level setting. I think the most important thing to start with is if you look on page 6, our water costs, the budgeted costs that we've put in this year, kind of the basis to the bare minimum to operate our system with the few number of customers that we have, there's $163,000, almost $164,000 in operation costs. There's $71,000 in debt for past capital improvements. We have not budgeted this year capital costs for improvement projects or contributions to a reserve for future improvements, but we're recommending that if we indeed did those two things at about $25,000 apiece, our total projected cost to truly operate the system for today and the future would be $293,000. At our current water rates, our projected revenue is $207,000. So we have a shortfall, as reported in this past year, the second year that we've had that, projected with what we really should be spending, we have a projected shortfall of $85,000 to make up. So really the task for the council is we have a small customer base and nobody likes to pay more than they absolutely have to for water, and nobody likes water rate increases, but we cannot continue to operate at a loss in the water fund. So we have, with the help of these gentlemen, they have proposed a logical, systematic approach of what does it cost, what are the components of operations, of debt, of capital replacements and reserves, and then worked into what's a fair rate structure with base rates and usage rates that shares that on an equitable basis among the customers that we have. One of the levers that would be great is if we had a lot more water customers, if we had subdivisions coming back online, lots more new businesses. That will happen over time, but it won't happen this year, and we need to balance the budgets out this year. So kind of with that as a where we are current state, I'll turn it over to you guys. Harlow, do you have any wisdom or expertise from other communities that found themselves in the same situation?
I think the council needs to decide philosophically whether they want the enterprise fund to run on its own or to continue to transfer funds from other funds to keep to sustain the operation. And setting water rates is as much an art as it is a science. And for example, when I was at the Broad River Water Authority, the board took a position that they wanted to have fairly high base rates and a lower volume rate so that they had a guaranteed revenue stream to meet their fixed expenses. And so what we've attempted to do here, and I'm taking doing the speaking, but these gentlemen did the work. And what they looked at is they looked at these several scenarios. The first one on page 6, for example, is simply taking your existing rates and adding a percentage to them to generate the $293,000. That's all that is. And you can go way over. You can see what the average bill is now and what it would become in percent increase. What we did is we selected 30 customers, and we took and they are identified in the second column. For example, customer number one is your largest commercial user. And then we had residential customers based on a high residential user, a medium user, and a low user. So you can see exactly how your bi-monthly bills would go under this particular scenario. We don't have, the three of us, we don't have a favorite scenario that we're recommending because I think that's something philosophically the council would need to discuss and see what they're going to do. So as you go through these, for example, on page 8, the first scenario, we put a heavier increase on residential customers and a lower percentage on commercial customers. And you can see the resulting how that resulted in the, if you go way over to the column on the right, you can see how that resulted in percent change. But what that does, as Chris mentioned earlier, that this scenario one is shifting the burden from more to the residential customers and away from your commercial customers. We understood that the council wanted to look at a scenario like that. The next scenario, two, do you want me to go through these one by one or leave them for you to study on your own?
Well, each one does balance, each one makes up the shortfall, right?
Everyone does.
Okay, so each one makes up that 85.
They all make up the shortfall.
They just do it different ways.
But they're balanced differently and weighted differently on your customers. So, for example, scenario two, you can see that there is an increase for all your customers, but there's a lesser increase on your commercial customers than there are on your residential. So basically, every one of these scenarios goes ahead and calculates out the rates based upon different groups of customers. And so, this is something the council needs to discuss and decide where they want to put the, if there is a rate increase, where you want to put the burden.
So it's a 54% rate increase, but it could be pushed more towards some groups and less toward others or so forth. But regardless, we would be charging 54% more for the water.
That's correct.
Right, water and sewer. I have a question about how we arrived at the $85,800 number for the shortfall, because as I look at our year-end performance or budget performance from last year, we had a $6,000 shortfall at current rates. And as I look at what the income that's projected here is $658,000, and that's $72,000 less. Wait a minute, I've got the, yeah, the, yeah, it's 70,
five,
yes, I'm sorry.
Are you on page 5?
I'm on page 6, and I'm getting the what I don't see in the report is how we have projected for the new budget year that we're in now, a shortfall of $85,800 when we're charging the same rates that we were for the past fiscal year. And during that period of time, our shortfall was $6,013.
I can address some of that.
Okay.
So this recommended water costs, the first section here, includes $50,000 of recommended investments that we don't currently have in this year's budget. That's part of that. The other part is in the year we just finished, we had some revenues that we didn't anticipate and we don't anticipate having again this year. That kind of makes up for less revenues that we're planning in this coming year. And for this analysis, instead of taking the bare bones approach that we took just to get a budget balanced this year, we've said really what we ought to be doing is not only covering our operating expenses and our debt, but reasonably putting some money in there for capital improvements and contributions to reserve. And that $50,000 doesn't go a long way. You'll see in your consent agenda a water project on Asa Gray and Washburn Road that's going to be upwards of $140,000. So we're saying putting a nominal amount each year, this $50,000 into capital costs. And if you do that and cover your debt and cover your operating costs, your expenses should be $293,000. Our current budget, we don't have that much in expenses.
I was in on the Asa Gray, the Lurmont discussions, and when we were going through that plan, and if I remember correctly, once we finish that, then we were done with galvanized pipes in town. We that pretty much took care of the galvanized pipes, and we changed out one of the pump stations, and if I remember correctly, tell me if I'm not remembering this correctly, but I thought we were, that once we got that accomplished, our infrastructure was supposed to be in pretty good shape there.
Well, two different things. That does remove the last of the galvanized pipes that were that we know of in the area. We're still in town center dealing with nearly 100-year-old water infrastructure underneath the arcade and the inn, cast iron pipes out there, old valves. So throughout town, like many other towns, we've got old aging water systems. So even when we do projects that upgrade pieces of it, we can always anticipate that there's going to be breaks every week, every month, for perpetuity.
Are we having regular leaks there with the pipe that the part that Chris just mentioned? Is that, I mean, is that a concern? Is that I know it's old, but sometimes they last a long time.
The cast iron pipe is supposed to last 100 years.
Okay.
And this cast iron pipe is installed when it was not lined with cement mortar, so that can be a problem. But like Chris says, you don't really know when something's going to happen. And the LGC, the local government commission, part of the state treasurer, they recommend that and they enforce this in some communities that are not responsible, but they recommend that you put 8% of your budget into a capital reserve fund for just such a situation that we're discussing right now. So I think it's good to contribute to the capital reserve so that you have that money there should something happen.
Yeah, that's nice to have, but looking at a 54% rate increase, I cringe at that.
My thoughts, it's hard for me to evaluate hitting the large user and make it less painful for a smaller user or vice versa. But I wonder if a strategy that we couldn't use is not go the 54, as I say, but recognize that we've got to catch up and do this over a two or three year time frame to catch up so that the pain is less, but it's graduated. So you go after a fund, I mean, you balance the funds through the general fund, but maybe if you come in with a 30% increase or some such thing, and that's maybe that mitigates the 54, the sting of it.
Well, anything less than 24, than 54 is better than 54, obviously, but the capital cost, there's a round number here, $25,000 for the upcoming year. What do you envision that being spent on?
Privately, in the past year, the kinds of projects were unexpected reservoir repairs. We had a leak last year, pretty significant leak up at the Washburn Road Reservoir that ate up, $30,000 pretty quickly. We don't have those every year, but they do come up. It's that category of not knowing what's going to be there. We used to have a fairly good reserve fund in the water sewer fund to account for those unexpected things. That fund has been drained drastically. So now we have to either budget for those unexpected occurrences or recognize we're not very self-insured. One of the things that we've been doing is we implemented a 3-cent tax for infrastructure projects. That is a general fund tax that's taxed on all taxpayers, whether they're water customers or sewer customers or not. It's a policy choice that we make to collect that from all taxpayers and to use it for projects like the Asa Gray Washburn Road water system improvement. Technically, the local government commission frowns upon that and would rather You pay for all your water needs with just your water customers and their rates. We recognize that that may not be feasible, so right now we're borrowing from all of the taxpayers in order to pay for shortfalls and needs in the water system. This approach helps you get away from that, and you don't necessarily have to do it all at once, but you want to put yourself on a pathway that says all of the repairs and capital improvement needs of water are borne by water customers.
I agree that that's the ideal, but I would suspect that we aren't the only town in North Carolina that is in the same predicament. Is that a fair statement?
Yes.
So this goes on fairly.
I don't know of many towns that I've been associated with that they actually supplement the enterprise from the general fund. I would say that's a little bit unusual. But if the council sees to, as the mayor has suggested, to peck away at something over a 2-3 year period of time, to eventually get yourself into a position where the enterprise fund is supporting itself, including having some money for emergencies and capital improvements, I would think that would be the best way to proceed.
There are other towns out there that are supplementing the capital improvements more so through the general fund.
There are other towns that I've seen that have the opposite situation of us. When they reach a size where they have a significant number of water customers, the water business becomes fairly profitable. You have a kind of fixed investment and overhead, and the more customers and the more water they have, you start to cover those costs and then generate a profit. Towns use that profit to then go back into their general fund and try to use it for sidewalks and other things. Again, the LGC says, wait a minute, now your water customers are financing other parks and things. So either way, ideally what they like is an enterprise fund to stand alone as a business, like CWS Utilities Inc. is a business in the water and sewer business. They have customers up at Rumbling Ball Resort, and they're covering the costs of just that business, and any profits are just for that business. One of the comparisons that you see here as a benchmark on slide four or slide three is our current rates. When we talk about a sizable increase, they're already at a point that are lower than other benchmarks. So right now, our average water bill is $43 a month. We bill bi-monthly. Our sewer bill is $40.70 a month, and the total of the two, if your customers have water and sewer, is $83.70 a month. In Rumbling Ball Resort, where those customers are of a private water and sewer entity, instead of $43, the average bill there for the same volume of water is $55.83. So over a $12 monthly increase for the same service. Their sewer, where we're charging $40.70, is $52.19. So that's already a comparison of citizens and water and sewer customers in town. If you're up on the northern end, you're already paying that differential.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we can pull comparisons from all over. We've got a notice here on slide four. You have the statewide average with a similar number of users is $34 a month on the water and $39 on sewer, which is significantly less than what we have. So it's comparisons are are good to look at and informative, but they're just that for information.
When we compare to towns that are not resort towns, we actually do not supply water to our entire town, as most towns do within their town limits. And because we don't, we have a smaller base. And even with that smaller residential base, who are even on town water, many of them are paying rates who are here only part of the year. So we're somewhat unique in that regard. And it's hard to compare apples and oranges. I don't know to what extent even the resort is comparable in terms of, they too probably have some water users who pay whether they use it or not. I don't know if they have a larger comparable base than we do. We need more people on our water lines.
Well, that's the bottom line, is to provide the water as an essential service to the fewer than 500 customers that are in Lake Lure. We have some in Chimney Rock, but the fewer than 500 customers, not all of whom have to have municipal water, but a great many of them have to have municipal water. To provide that, we operate several wells, several pumps, several storage tanks, or an elevated water tower, miles and miles of distribution lines, lots of meters, lots of valves, and we do it with 1.5 staff, and we do it as efficiently as we can, but it's just a lot of overhead and infrastructure to bring water to fewer than 500 people.
At what cost, I mean, speaking of future, at what cost do you, would you think it would take to reduce all of these reservoirs, all of this distribution line, to have a main focused water plant? What do you look at? How can you compare that, or you know, what are our options? Can we get to that point?
We could, and one of the things that Mr. Brown's firm is looking at when we get a couple of current projects behind us is exactly that, is coming up with some cost estimates for an entirely different means of capturing, treating, and storing water. We always have to distribute it using the lines that get to people's houses. There's no way to avoid that. But other cities use more cost-effective approaches than the six or seven wells that people have to run around and inspect every day and test and treat. There are different ways to do it. We have a fairly sizable water reservoir. It's in the name of our town out there. There are options, and ultimately we should be looking in the long run of what are the costs and benefits of those different options. Doesn't help us today, but that is something that we're looking at in the long run.
Are we looking at millions of dollars for a water plant? Millions and millions of dollars? What are we looking
no.
at?
No.
What
you can easily buy a package plant that would be very reasonable. I'd like to move on to the concept we have for the sewer rates, if that's okay, Mayor.
Sure.
You have, I'm not sure, somehow my page numbers get wrong from what you all have, but there's a slide in there that says sewer flat rate.
Page 16,
okay. We took a look at your customer count because, except for the water system at Ramblin' Ball and in Lake Lure are two distinct separate systems. They have their system, we have ours, you have your system. It's not quite like that with the sewer, because all the sewerage from Ramblin' Ball in the town goes in the same collection system under the lake and ends up in the same treatment plant. And so what you have now is you're billing your water customers a volume rate for sewer. But as Chris mentioned, that's less than half of your sewer customer base. All your other sewer customers, and you have 991 of them, all the other sewer customers are billed a flat rate. And so we thought we were going to ask the council to maybe consider philosophically let every sewer customer in their particular class, you know, like small residential, medium residential, small commercial support, let every sewer customer in the entire system pay the same rate for sewer service, which would be a flat rate. And what this would do, it would generate a consistent revenue stream into your sewer enterprise fund. It would also, in our humble opinion, be more fair than charging this customer based on volume, where they've got to watch how they're handling their own household. This customer's on a flat rate. They're really not paying much attention to that. And it would bring, we feel, a fairness to your entire customer base to go to a flat rate system. And especially since today, more than 50% of the sewer bills that go out from the town are flat rate already today. And so we would ask for a consideration of that. That chart right there gives you your customer count and the breakdown into the different groups. And this was generated through the records in your customer service department. So that's a change from having two systems of billing sewer customers to just the one system. And if you go to, am I missing a page? Oh, this is, it's the rates are in that chart. I'm sorry. So we've identified on there your largest and your extra large customers and what the in your residential counts. Those are all your counts for your customer base. So that's something we thought the council would ask the council to at least study and consider.
So with this study and data at hand, I think the council can do a couple of things. They could give direction back to the team on adjustments or modifications or focus on a particular scenario or a pricing approach. We could take this into follow-on workshops where we get all or a subset of the council to dig into this more deeply with this team and try to hammer out what is an appropriate rate structure for this. We're sort of at your direction with this data at hand.
Well, the 50%, I'm less clear on the sewer side. The 50% that pay a flat rate now, of the other 50% that don't pay a flat rate, are they going to increase substantially? Or is it going to be all up and down?
The majority of sewer bills will probably decrease.
So, and still find the 85,000, 86,000.
Would you like us to put a chart together on that?
Well, I just I'm a little less clear. Yeah. The other one's spelled out a little better. To my simple mind,
it would depend on their water usage. Those that are high consumers of water, if they go to a flat rate, are going to see a break, and their rates will probably go down. Others, might see an increase.
Okay.
We'd have to do that.
Okay. Like if you got an irrigation system, you get a hot bill every month.
Yeah.
Right. Okay.
Yeah, that's correct. Because you don't have separate irrigation meters.
I can draft up a chart if you would like to see one that shows the technical.
we should be on the hook for producing these, deciding on these rates fairly soon.
Yes.
We should be getting the new structure in place as soon as possible.
We bill every 2 months, so every 2 month delay is a lost opportunity to get those increased rates.
I'd just like to see us have a session on it and just beat it around a little bit. One thing I'd like to see is just if we took like lower rates and ran them up to what Rumlin Bar was paying, just see what that number would be.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. If you could set up some meetings.
So we'll work with Andy and set a workshop on this. We've got a couple of requests for some more analysis.
Question too. The estimated shortfall that you're showing here, both in water and sewer, is that to continue if we don't do anything? I mean, is this amount? No.
No, we have a balanced budget, and that budget has little to no capital improvements in it. So again, this is a recommendation of a you know, an ideal situation. If you're truly funding everything you ought to be funding, that's your shortfall. You know, our budget this year, we can skimp by with a much smaller revenue increase, but we're not able to fund those capital improvements or reserves.
Okay,
so we defer this to a special session.
Okay.
All right.
Thank you, guys.
Thank you for receiving our report.
That was nice.
Well, let's take a 10-minute break. We'll be back. Start at 20 of. C. Appoint members to serve on the Asset Management Task Force. Chris, you want to make a comment about that, about the structure of it? I heard you talking about it before. And
yeah. The recommendation and the idea has bubbled up from a variety of places that it would be good to have a citizen task force to look at the assets the town has, principally the pieces of property that we have around town, and to look at them strategically and what's the highest and best use of these pieces of property, some of which have buildings on them, some of which may not, and come up with a set of recommendations on any changes that we might make. Property to sell, property to lease, property to develop, property to acquire, that would fit in with our overall strategic plans, our comprehensive plans, our small area plans, our needs for cash, all of that together. So what we've recommended is, rather than making that a formal standing advisory board that has regular monthly meetings and officers and council liaison and all that comes with an advisory board, let's start with a fairly informal task force that we can convene. Shannon and I will work with them to provide them information about the town assets that we have, what staff's strategic view is. So we thought that's a good idea, and that the participants of that task force should be appointed by town council, people that town council feel have something to offer to that process. It can be whatever the council wants. There's really no restrictions on how many people are on that board. We'll get the board together and decide organically how often they want to meet and for how long it's going to take for them to bring their recommendations back to the council. And after that point, we could, you know, evaluate and say, hey, if this was a great idea and we want to turn it into a regular formal advisory board that works every month of every year, we can do that. Or you can disband it after recommendations come. So this just gives you flexibility to ease into this.
Very good, Chris. Thanks. You know, with that being said, I mean, we have a plethora of really quality people here. The only question, and Marianne had mentioned it before, is there any conflict of interest by having a husband and wife or two people from the same real estate company? I don't know. What's your thoughts on any of that?
Well,
My thinking was that if you want to get a variety of perspectives, generally a task force is appointed by looking at people from who may have different points of view to come together and to do the initial brainstorming or whatever you call it. At the time I questioned, we had a place to vote for five candidates, and we had five candidates. And one was husband and wife. Then we got tonight at the meeting, we received four additional candidates. And one of the originals and one of the additional ones are involved with the same real estate office. And I think realtors are some of the best people to assess the value and best use and highest use and so forth of the various properties. But my question would be, do we need to advertise or seek out candidates that represent different points of view as opposed to a husband and wife or people in the same firm? Some of the other candidates come from different points of view, and so my question was, how many people can we have? And the question was, apparently any number we want at this point. So I don't know if we want to select five members, if we want to select more, if we want to discuss how we get some sort of a balance of points of view, or if we need to, did we post on the website or have a call for candidates? I know we did in some of the past times when we had openings on boards. We said, you know, there are openings on these boards if you're interested. But
I'd have to
apparently
go.
The husband and wife didn't, according to what I saw on their application, they are new to the area. They've been here since December. They are both wanting to be active in the community, which I appreciate. And I understand from people who know them better than I that they're very good community involved people that we want to have on board. But do we need to set some criteria, or what's everybody else thinking?
Well, we're starting out a new, it's really just kind of an advisory ad hoc committee. I think when we talked about it before, we decided that five was kind of the ideal number you have. They gave you room for lots of opinions, but not to become so unwieldy that it becomes less effective. There's a kind of a sweet spot in there somewhere. You want to have enough diversity of opinion, but then you don't want to get it to get so big that it becomes becomes unwieldy. So I think the five number is adequate, it's appropriate, it's what we have here, it's what we have on zoning and planning. It's kind of a precedent for five in our boards and committees around here. And you know, as far as the husband and wife or the two real estate agents working out of the same office, I don't think it's not exactly the same. The real estate agents are independent contractors. They might work in one office, but they each really work on their own. So I don't have a problem with that, but I would say we start off with the five, and if we see there's a need, or if the committee comes back and says, you know, we really would have like to have some more members, we could do that, and they could certainly have anyone else that they wanted to or that was interested come join them as they have their discussions and look at different properties and make different decisions. They can certainly bring in anybody they wanted to.
Mm-hmm. I'm missing one name. I you said there was nine?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah. Who are the four that were added?
Michael Holden.
Got it.
Andy Bell.
Yep.
Barbara Marsh Searcy.
That's the one I don't have.
And you got Chris. Chris and Shannon.
London Turner.
Chris and Shannon both are on this too, so it's a good one.
Oh, okay.
So they're both already on meeting.
I tell you, I don't disagree with you, John, but I look at this and I would hate to rule out any one of these people. They're all absolutely super quality, and for getting started, I could see them in being an advisory capacity, and maybe yeah. We won't bring this down to seven or five later on, but I just would hate to not, I mean, every one of them is really quality folks.
On the other hand, in order for these people to meet, there are times they may have conflicts, they may not all be able to attend all meetings, and to have more than five, I mean, if we narrow it down to five, we may have only three.
That's true with any board. We always get here to our meetings, and the zoning and planning do. The Board of Adjustment has some alternate members. You could have, if they have their organizational meeting, decide they want some alternate members or some other people in there, that's something they can do. They'll know their schedule.
So. Well, we have more members on some boards than others.
Yeah, that's fine.
And I have been to board meetings where there were three members present.
Well, I think we should, my recommendation is to start with five, look at it as we go down the road, get the input back from the committee and re-examine it if we need to.
Chris, will the task force meetings be advertised and open?
Yes.
So other
yes.
people can attend?
Yes.
Yes.
Okay. They're public meetings.
Yep. You want to start with a shot of everybody writing five names down and pass them over and see that way we get a consensus or
sure.
we have.
Are you set on five, not seven?
Yeah. Well, I think it'd be fine to start out with, and then if we, let's look at it, let them meet a time or two, because we've got. I just, talking with some of the guys who originally came up with this concept, and Charlie Ellis and Tom McKay, two of our zoning and planning board members, were, kind of instrumental in coming up with this idea. Mm-hmm. That was kind of the recommendation that they had, mm-hmm. and I agree that I think that's the way to start out.
Well, I believe because we have Shannon, we have Chris, we have Tom, we have Charlie, and all of those are town board or staff people. If we want input from the public, it's not going to hurt anything to increase it to seven.
I would prefer seven myself on this task force. And then they can...
Well, you can add them, it's hard to take them off.
But it's not going to be a continuing, more than likely not a continuing task force, because the assessments are made, because here's the assessment plan right there, and when that is finished, then there's nothing more for them to assess.
Well, Tom and Charlie are all already on the planning board.
Right.
So that would only be five other people.
I tell you that I met the Buckinghams several times, and I'd love to see more of them on it. They're very, very good people, but that's just my opinion. I don't get a chance to vote, so you guys...
Well, if I can make a motion, I would move that we name a total of seven since we make it seven, that we contribute seven names.
Okay. Motion made by Mary Ann to have seven names. Do I hear a second?
Second.
Second by Diane. Is there any further discussion? Hearing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Okay, that was one, two? Only two?
Yeah.
Okay, I have to break the tie. Let me, do I hear anybody abstain or say no? I guess.
I say no.
Okay, no.
I want five. Yeah, I think it's five.
Five. No?
Yeah.
Okay, I'm the tiebreaker again, and I'm a lucky seven is what I'd like to go with.
Seven.
So write down seven names, and then we'll see where we'll see where this takes us. And while you're doing that, I'm going to say that I'm going to allow Gary McCall to come up. Mine is a miserable thing sometimes. I've forgotten. I said that he could come up and just talk very quickly about the water sewer rates. And let us finish this process first, Gary. But then you're welcome up here. Mine is a terrible thing. I couldn't remember what the quote was.
Consensus on seven of the top vote-getters in no particular order. Andy Bell, Jack Buckingham, Charlie Ellis, Jonathan Hinkle, Tom McKay, Linda Turner, and Mike Holden. The members of this task force.
Which Buckingham?
Jack.
Okay, thank you. Mm-hmm. Gary, welcome forward.
Just a couple of comments. Last year when you were on vacation, the water thing came up and Chris had proposed a 9% when Mayor was on vacation, excuse me. Chris had proposed a 9% increase, and Mr. Moore didn't think the taxpayers could afford it. And firstly, I would like to see ratcheted up, maybe 4.5 to get to the 9. It's kind of hard to imagine how we get from 9 last year, as proposed by Chris, 54% increase. The other thing, and the reason for not going along with the 9% last year was we didn't have a 3-cent tax for infrastructure. And now we're talking about that the water is not infrastructure. So we want to have it all. So to me, that's another tax increase. So I'd urge you to think about it. I don't know what the minimum water bill, what it used to draw is, what the minimum water charge is. Does anybody know?
It's maybe was it about $43 a month?
I've got water, but Saluda County Water on Lake Murray, and run the water because my house I put in a one way. About along the way, they had all our other customers and about 15 miles from the source. And my minimum water charge there is $27.50 a month, whether I use a drop or not. So there are other people who offer different examples. I offer that as an example. But I'm in favor of an increase for water because I think that the most important thing, one of the most important things the town can give us is good, clean water. It's not a better thing you can do. I was in favor of 4.5 last year, 4.5 this year, maybe 4.5 next year. But I don't like 54% all at one time. Thanks.
Very good. Thank you, Gary. Okay. Item number 10D, consider filling a vacant firefighter position. Ron, are you going to speak to this?
Good evening, Council. Y'all have already been briefed by Chris, but it's always been a bit. Wendy Craig, who's been with us for approximately 15 years, started out as a secretary position and then kind of part-time and full-time and then moved into a firefighter and administrative position. Has accepted the position with the Rutherford Fire Department. It's actually a pretty good promotion and actually probably better hours. So she'll be leaving. Her last day is at 16th of this month, which is this Saturday, I think it is. And so what we're asking is for permission to fill this position as it is, and no changes, but it should be basically the same. Don't anticipate any changes. And I'll answer any questions you may have.
If I understand, explain to me the staffing now. It's been explained to me before, but it's not fresh on my mind.
Basically, right now, we have a total of 6 full-time employees, including myself. All the full-time employees except myself are on 24-hour shifts, and that gives us the most coverage, the most hours for the personnel that we have. And that gives us 2 people. We have 3 different shifts, A shift, B shift, and C shift. On the A shift and C shift, we have 2 people 24 hours a day. On B shift, we have 1 person 24 hours a day. Wendy works on A shift currently on 24-hour shift.
Okay, so if you've got 3 shifts, then they can do that since they're covering 24 hours at a time.
Correct.
And 2 of them operate with 2 firefighters each, and the 3rd operates with 1 firefighter. My question would be, could another shift not operate with 1 firefighter?
And that's not exactly accurate. The second firefighter on that 3rd shift or that B shift is me. When that B shift is working, basically I'm the second firefighter either here or on call when it responds. Prior to the shift schedule that we have now, when Randy, our former assistant chief, was here, we did an alternate on call and it ended up with a whole lot of response back and a whole lot of back and forth time. But when he retired, we changed our shift personnel, our personnel shifts, to this position, which has basically been a huge improvement in the coverage. It's also been a help in the amount of back and forth time for me. Our assistant chief now does the way customers in the audience, works a 24-hour shift also. And if I'm out of town and unable to be on call, he covers for me while I'm out of town. But, so technically we do have, and our goal is to try to provide two people in town or immediately available all the time. With the staffing, we can't quite do that, but that's what our goal is. So technically we pretty much have two people, even on weekends when B shift, the short shift, when B shift is working, even Saturdays and Sundays, I come in and work during the prime times.
Is this going to be somebody local or, out of the local area, or somebody going to be far away?
Of course we have to advertise, just like any position, if y'all approve this position. And traditionally and recently, we have hired fairly local people, and that would be our goal. In recent hires, we have hired people who were already like volunteer members or people in the area that already knew the area, kind of knew the drill, and took one less training, but also try to keep as many jobs as we can local.
Do you have local volunteers that would be interested in this job?
We do. We have at least one or two local volunteers that have shown some interest in this job.
Could you tell me what Wendy does that requires her replacement, since we've been in this kind of a non-hiring position now with the council?
This position's a little unique, and it's classified as a similar to the firefighter's position. But over and above that, Wendy, when she was originally hired 15 years ago, her primary goal was record keeping and secretarial work. Now, she doesn't do the record keeping for Lake Lure Fire Department. She also does record keeping for Bills Creek, Chimney Rock, and Fairfield Fire Department. She does all the computers are required now to be put in the computer and sent to Raleigh and on a timely manner, regular manner. Also, our training records must be kept up, and pretty much all of our records for everything we do, which is directly tied to probably one of the most critical things for our ISO inspection. You know, it's kind of one of those deals where what you can do on the scene and what you can do is one thing, but you have to prove everything that you do in paper, and that's the main thing that they expect when it comes to the ISO rating. So she did a lot of that for us, and probably even more so for the volunteer fire departments. That's something that's always been part of her job. So that gap has to be filled somehow. Each one of our full-time positions has, in addition to just being a firefighter, has assignments and duties that directly relate to the ISO rating. For example, we have one guy who's totally responsible. He doesn't do it all by himself. Everybody chips in, but he's responsible to make sure that all the hydrants are flowed and tested and recorded and painted and maintained and such as that. But another guy takes care of all the hose tests and records, and another guy takes care of the equipment maintenance and records and so on and so forth. So each person already has a full plate. So if we're unable to fill this position, something could be a little bit.
What is it that or the record keeping that she's doing? Is she actually keeping the records, or is she transferring it to the computer and sending it to Raleigh? Or
every time the departments respond, they do what's called a field report, which is a paper report. And then that paper report has to be basically gone back and put into a computer and then maintained in the manner, as well as all the training records and equipment records and this, that, and other. And then that stuff is sent. The appropriate stuff sent to Raleigh, somebody's maintaining it now.
So it's basically just computer input.
Oh. That's part of her job. That's not all of her job. Like I said, in addition to her full-time firefighter position, where she does the same thing that other guys do, that is on top of that. Like I said, each one of our firefighters have duties over and above their regular firefighter's job. That was her part of it.
Is the is that part of the job so specialized that that other people couldn't do? I mean, it's not something that requires a lot of training. It sounds like it's, if I understand what you're saying, that you're taking a form and moving it over to computer, to electronic format.
It's a bit more to it than that. Obviously, the software, the knowledge of software, and from that perspective, but there's more to it from the perspective of, and all our firefighters are guilty. You know, they put down stuff and then they infer a lot of stuff. So it takes a good bit of firefighter knowledge to know what was done on that call, because there's some shorthand abbreviations and some inferred stuff that we know that, that has to be transferred within that report. So it's, no, it's not something that you just pick up somebody and say, put these reports in. It's just much more detailed than that.
Is it something that the firefighters could put in themselves?
Well, that was the reason that she was hired, is because we had a deficiency in that. The volunteer fire departments, at the time it was all volunteer fire departments, so that was a difficulty they had, was in addition to all, and you've praised them many times at our council meetings for all they already do, this is something that the chiefs have said they really need to help with. And it's not something that you can just let go. And the other part of it is, too, is this is because it's the town's ISO rating that's at stake. It's not that individual fire department's ISO rating, it's the town's ISO rating. So that was kind of why it became obvious and has worked so well that, that we provided some staff help to make sure that all those records were kept in a manner that would help us most along with ISO inspection. Which shortly thereafter, you know, when she came to work, and then shortly thereafter we had our ISO inspection that did go well and was in a huge reduction. Something else I would like to mention is actually we have already scheduled a meeting with the chiefs next Tuesday morning. And our main agenda for that meeting is we're looking to request another ISO inspection or a re-inspection, for which we think we'll do better. That's the plan. When we hired additional personnel a little over 5 years ago, I guess approaching 6 years ago, you know, we basically took on a whole lot of maintenance and record keeping and stuff that's required by ISO to get a better rate. And we took on a lot of stuff that had just not been getting done, because as all volunteers, it just wasn't possible. Now, ISO comes in and they look at your last 3 years' records. Okay, that's what they grade you on, is 3 years' records. So after we had that behind us, we started anticipating it's a good time to look for ISO re-inspection. I went to the ISO staff, Raleigh, with the Department of Insurance staff, last August, and spoke to them about a re-inspection. They advised me at the time to hold off because they were going through a huge transition in the ISO grading process. Now they've kind of got that under their belt. I've already spoke with them, and they said quite a time for us. So that's the purpose of the meeting next Tuesday, is to pursue a re-inspection. So you know, we've got everything kind of established. We don't need a gap to occur now when we're expecting them to come probably sometime next spring or summer.
On a medical call, do both, and you have a two-person shift, do both people go out on a medical call?
It depends what it is. If it's a serious call, such as a cardiac arrest or a medical call at the park, we're going to have to do a carry-out, for example, such as that. You know, both the paid person respond to that. If it's an average medical call, typically one person will respond. Volunteers may respond to the scene too, and then the second person will stay back. Because of the nature of our community, you have this high influx of tourists at times and different times. We see a pretty high percentage of second calls while we already have one call going on. So it has paid off. The procedure that we use has paid off many, many times to usually send out one if they need help, the second person can go, or they can run a second call. For example, the storm we had a couple weekends ago, you know, we were all going in different directions, as well as every volunteer we could get our hands on. We were still having like a hard time. Not just Lake Lure, but you know, all the departments was out going in every different direction trying to answer calls. We said, for example, we had a tree in Paraline down that we had to stay with for 7 hours before the power got there. And actually, that was Winnie that sat there with that tree by herself. The cat actually stayed with her for a while. And I said, you need to go home and get sleep because you got to work tomorrow. But that's another benefit that the paid staff has. Whereas if that was the only person on duty, then we wouldn't have anybody else responding to the other paid staff.
That was the night of the gas explosion?
That was also that night. Right. We had 3 or 4 calls at the same time. Right.
I don't have any question. It's you know, nice to have that position. I still have a bit of hesitation because we've got all this money we need to spend on dredging, And that's what gives me a little bit of pause. I want to make sure that any position that we replace is we're absolutely sure that that our money is better spent there than it is on the dredging, because the dredging is really has gotten so serious over the last few years.
I understand your concern, and in all honesty, I think y'all know me well enough, but I'm just going to be straight with you. If we lose this position, it would be detrimental to the way we operate. I really think it would hurt us. I know it would hurt us because of the inability to keep up with stuff that we're trying to keep up with now. I know it would be detrimental to our operation. I understand the dredging concern, but from the other aspect of it too, I know we've sit here and discussed and concerned about raising taxes. I'm with you on that. The other side of it is too, is when we got our ISO rate in 01, we seen the homeowners, not the town. It didn't come back to the town, but it went back to the homeowners, you know, probably on average a 30% reduction, maybe more in their homeowners insurance. Some of them have told me now, because, and Mr. Gilley can confirm this, but the insurance now has got to be very particular about who's in that rated area and who's not in that rated area. And I've had some people on the edges of town, just outside of town, call and say, my insurance is basically double. What's happened? So technically, they would get credit for our rate if they were outside of town. And so they called up and they were getting something that they shouldn't have been getting. Not of their fault, not of their intent, but it just happened. And so the insurance rates are a huge deal, and that's something that we can do to put the money back in the property owner's pocket. So really, you know, our goal is to try to get a better ISO rating. We think we can this time around, and I do think it will be money will spend, not just for fire protection, not just for ISO, but it's really
necessary. It was my understanding that the ISO rating that we had now, which is a 6, is it?
It's a 6 last time.
Yeah. Okay, right, the 6. There's no more for the type structures we have around Lake Lure.
The type of structure.
There's no more insurance credits to be gained by getting a better rating. Am I right on that?
Yes, there is. All commercial structures, which a lot of our residential structures, such as timeshare apartments, townhomes, such as that, maybe not townhomes, but anything that's rated as a commercial building is still standing significantly.
If they get a better ISO rating than a 6.
Well, I agree with John that people have been made aware and want the dredging. The dredging has to go on. I don't think any of those people want to cut the services that the fire departments are providing. And when everybody has had their say, I would like to make a motion.
Okay, anything else?
No, because I go along with the replacement of Wendy's position in advertising.
Mm-hmm. Is that a motion?
Yes, how's that?
I'll second it.
Okay, motion made by Diane, second by Mary Ann. Is there any further discussion? Hearing none, all in favor say aye.
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 That's unanimous.
Thank you. I appreciate
your
time.
Okay. Thank you, Ron.
Okay. Let me find my place here. 10E, consider adoption of resolution number 14-8-12B, appointing the Lake Lure NC9 Small Area Plan Steering Committee and initiating the small area plan development process. Shannon, oh, there you are there. Sorry, I didn't catch you out of the corner of my eye.
President of the county board.
Yes, good.
This is a project that emanates from the comprehensive plan called back in January of 2013, early December 2012. There was a joint meeting between the council and the planning board. Basically three projects above the top. We're getting ready to wrap up two of those, which is the Main Street plan and the other one is the gateway. This is the third one that we wanted to get to before the other two, but we just didn't get to it in the way that we wanted to. But now we're there. We have money in the budget's been approved, contract's been signed. So now what we're trying to do is appoint the stakeholder committee to ensure that we get perspectives out of NC9 to feed into the design process and the review of the land use and also the utilities. So we've contracted with Knight Strategies, who has two or three engineers behind him, working with him. And so all this together culminate in a plan for NC9, which is finished in 7 December. So in your package, that resolution has different categories of organizations and stakeholders that as soon as you pass this resolution, we're going to contact and see, invite them to the table. A little different than some of the other committees we've been talking about, because this is really, it's more of an informal group that gets together, has discussions, shares their perspectives, and they feed into the design process, just like we've been doing these other two plans. Probably more than likely won't see a vote. Things don't get that critical. So we have 19 of potential persons to serve on this committee. But it's really an information session that feeds into the design process that helps us produce a better report. So that's what this is here. Tonight, if you pass this, what I also would like for you to do is to appoint a member from town council to serve in addition to the motion approval of the resolution. I'll be glad to answer any questions you have.
I've got a question in that, what you were just talking about, group three and group seven. I noticed that Mary Ann is in group seven, a property owner. Can she serve dual purpose as group three and be the town council person? I mean, would that, or do you want somebody else on there?
Well, I thought about that when I was drafting the resolution, trying to ensure a maximum amount of input.
Yeah.
And at this point, it would be up to the board and up to Mary Ann. But my thought was she may want to have the liberty to really think about basically her perspective as a property owner out of that area. And then again, you may want to have somebody that's really thinking on behalf of the council. Mm-hmm. That way you get both covered. But I'll defer to the judgment of the council. Mm-hmm. If you want to wrap everything up into Mary Ann, if she's willing to do that, if you're willing to appoint her to do that, then that's good.
Well, that's what I was asking. I mean, is that something?
Well, I will be participating.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
If that's not seen as a conflict of interest, which to me is not, I don't think I have shown myself to be self-serving.
Yeah.
But I do certainly have an interest in the plan there. And if there is someone else who has an interest and would like to be involved in that, I wouldn't.
I think you did a good job.
Opposed to having someone else there.
No, I think you do a good job.
Sounds good.
Okay. Make that part. Does anybody have a motion?
I'll make a motion that we adopt resolution 140812B.
Okay, do I hear a second?
Second.
Second by Diane. Motion made by Bob. Any further discussion? Hearing none, all in favor say aye.
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 That was unanimous.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you very much.
Okay. Item number 10F, consider adoption of resolution number 14-8-12, amending the personnel policy of the town of Lake Lure. Anita, are you nervous? Come on up here.
She's not had her.
She doesn't want any tough questions.
Do you want me to run through?
I had one question, but I'll save it for when you run through.
I've been working with David Hill. I've known him for probably 20 years, but we've been working to try to update and correct some mistakes that we found in the previous personnel policy. It was adopted originally in 2001. Then we had it amended in 2007. And looking on the listserv, I got to finding that some of the things in ours was wrong, so we corrected it. And so that we would make sure that everything's up to general statutes and all the new laws. We're going David to review it. And some of the things that we went over is like if an employee works 1,000 hours or more a year, you would have to put them on the retirement system, and the town would be paying like 12.47% for a general employee, and then the employee would have to put in their 6%. Our policy did say an employee working 1,000 hours or less was part-time, but that wasn't correct, so we'd have to say less than 1,000 hours. Then we just reformatted the headings and tried to put everything in an alphabetical order. We didn't have anything addressing holiday or overtime pay for the firefighters that were hired October 1, 2008, so we tried to put that into a schedule. We updated the separation allowance for the law enforcement officers because the previous policy said they had to work with the town of Lake Lure specifically for the last 5 years of employment. That's not correct. They can work somewhere else and then transfer to Lake Lure, and just said that the last 5 years was as a law enforcement officer, they're entitled to that. We updated the light duty status so that it will now just say approved if the duties exist and are needed out of time. Updated the holiday schedule to reflect and follow the schedule of the state of North Carolina. What they were doing, if Christmas Day fell on a Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday, they would be given an additional day. Now they have just took that away and it's a straight 3 days. So we just tried to follow their schedule. We updated to say that each position vacancy will be advertised for a minimum of 7 calendar days. Updated the vacation and sick accrual rates to address positions for 32-hour and 53-hour employees, which we did not have in 2007. And that's being the firefighter and a couple of administrative jobs. Then we updated vacation accrual rate to reflect two additional schedules for employees working 20 to less than 25 years, as our schedule right now stops at 15. Employees working 25 years or more, they would get another 2 days, and then it would max out at 24. If an employee leaves or terminates their position, they can only be paid out for 240 hours. What we do, January 1st of every year, everything over 240 rolls into sick time. And the employee, if they retire through the local government system, they can use that for early retirement. Then we just updated the policy to be consistent with the timing when allowing recognition of vacation accrual rate and transfer of sick leave. When accruing the vacation, they just get their accrual rate. It was allowing them to transfer that in within 2 years, and the transfer of sick leave was based on 1 year. They had that length of time to make the request, so we just made it all 1 year. We updated the salary schedule, eliminating the 30-step schedule, replacing with a high minimum, midpoint, and maximum rate schedule. What we've done now, we bring people in 5% less than the minimum. And that came up because we had, one example was police officers that had 1 year or more experience, and we had them just fresh out of school, is coming in starting the same minimum. So now, until they get all their certificates sent off and serve their 1 year probationary period, it will take them that long to get to a minimum. Then we took out and consolidated duplicate language, updated the drug and alcohol policy to clarify, per the general statutes, that emergency personnel are not allowed to consume any amount of alcohol while operating an emergency vehicle. Because the legal limit is 0.8, but not for emergency personnel. Updated the vehicle use policy to increase the mileage from 25 miles, which was an unspecified measuring technique, to 30 miles actual road mileage for employees granted overnight assignment of a take-home vehicle. And to include two options for employees exceeding the 30 miles to either get to the job site in personal vehicle without additional compensation or to pay the town the full IRS rate as determined annually for the additional miles outside of 30 miles. Then we updated and renewed the personnel policy and the personnel manual to strengthen the employment at will employer-employee relationship, making the document more of a guidebook and less of a quasi-legal document.
Anita, one thing that I had, I'm not 100% sure I was absolutely straight with was, or completely understood, was the vacation hours. You got, if somebody hire a new person coming in, they get, after they've been here a year, they're entitled to 10 days?
That's right.
10 days and vacation and 10 days sick? Okay, 8 hours sick per month, so that'd be 12 hours. I mean, 12 days. All right, so a new person can have, after they've been here a year, they've accumulated 10 days vacation and 12 days sick. Okay, and then at some point after a number of years, they go to a greater rate of accumulation. Where is that?
No, I'd have to look in the book. I think it goes to 12, and then it goes to 15 days, and I think it's at 5 years and at 10 years. Let me get here.
But they cannot use any of that until they've been here 6 months.
Right. Does the six stay the same the whole time? It never changes, regardless of the time. It, you know, however long anybody's been here, it's always 12 days a year.
That's right.
Okay. And
here's the vacation. Okay.
Yeah. It's less than 2 years, we get the 2 weeks. And then it goes 2 to 5, 5 plus the 10, 10 but less than 15, 15 but less than 20, and then we added the 20 but
less than 25 and 25 or more. All right. Well, can you give me the just the number of days of vacation
for each category? Okay, it's 10
for the first one.
Right.
12.
Wait a minute. 12, all right. New employee, 10 days.
Right.
All right, when they've been here 5 years?
It goes to 12.
All right, it goes, 5 years, it goes to 12.
Uh-huh.
All right, and then the next is break is 10 years?
Uh-huh, and it's 15.
15. All right, and then
18
at 15 years. All right, if 15 years, they get 18 days.
That's right. And then in 15 and above, they get 20.
20. Mm-hmm. At 15 and above or at 20 and above?
At 15 and above.
At 15 and above, they get 4 weeks vacation,
mm-hmm.
plus 11 sick days.
12
six days. Okay. That was where the change was. You didn't have the bumps before for the 15 and 20.
That's right. It just stopped at 15.
Uh-huh.
So we added 15 but less than 20, giving 2 more days and 20 but less than 25 and then 25 or more.
All right. At 20, between 20 and 25, we get how many days?
22.
And at 25, they get how many days?
24. And then it maxes out.
Is this your recommendation, Chris?
This is the recommendation that was developed in researching other municipalities and counties and the state. Their schedules had that upper end increase, and ours didn't. So consistent with other things that we've done, we said, you know, to be consistent and competitive, you would add that. It's not an essential. The reality of the impact on the town of vacation is we have very few people that consume all of their vacation in a year. So whether it's 3 weeks, 4 weeks, 5 weeks or more, it doesn't get consumed. It ends up rolling into sick time, and people retire before the town ever pays out any of that sick time. And what it allows them to do is to retire with additional service credits. Either retire early or retire with additional benefits. So then the net impact of that is you're giving a benefit that isn't really cashed in until retirement, and then it comes out of the retirement system. So it has, you know, very negligible impact on the town. There's not no impact, and ultimately it's all, you know, state tax dollars or contributions that employees have made, but it's a deferred benefit.
Very similar to federal retirement, I mean, federal sick days, vacation days, accrual.
Okay. Any other questions? You did make a mistake back in 2009.
What was that?
You took away the medical benefits for the council and mayor. Just kidding. Don't you see the
difference? We did. July 2007,
I'm only
kidding. By the council too.
Very good. Do I hear a motion to approve the new personnel policies?
Moved
by Mary Ann. Do I hear a second?
Second.
Second by Diane. Any further discussion? Hearing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
And I'd like to commend Anita for great work.
It's very nice.
It is very good work, and it took a long time to do, and it seems legal and technical and dry, but that a good personnel manual, in the hands of Anita, keeps us out of trouble from an employment standpoint. And then if you ever have to get into a situation where you have to defend yourself, the first place they look is your manual. So it's a good document, and I appreciate all the work.
Very good. Thank you, Anita. You still nervous?
You should visit us more.
Okay, item number 10G. Consider adoption of resolution number 14-8-12D, authorizing the release and closure of a soil road crossing a 34-acre tract of Classical Academy CFA, Inc. to other town property known as the Lake Lure Golf Course. Chris, are you going to talk to that one?
Yeah, let me try to talk you through this one and explain this. I'm sort of in a dual capacity involved in this. First is your town attorney, but because the Lake Lure Classical Academy, which is operating under the umbrella of the legal name of Classical Academy CFA, Inc., is, as you know, in the process of trying to build a school. And they're getting very close to doing it. And they have a closing date typically set for sort of a three-day process of August 26, 27, and 28. I've been told to reserve the 27th to receive all the loan papers and bring the title down the day and record it. But I've been doing legal work on this, you know, historically for the Classical Academy, too, and they asked me to do the title to it. Just to show you how close we are, I will pass $9 million commitment for title insurance, just to show you that it's in the works. This is the latest 50-something page loan agreement that is still in draft form, but I just want to show you that and show you how close they're getting to finally finalizing this. There are a lot of people involved in this. I'll be honest, I don't know how many people involved in this. I get emails addressed to 80 people that you look and see copies are made to, just to show you who some of the players are, because when you get this many lawyers involved, you'll learn somebody's always going to find an issue with something. It's just amazing. This all started when you remember you went to the General Assembly and you got a special act of the General Assembly authorizing you to lease or sell under whatever conditions you felt appropriate a portion of land. And it authorized you to include a reversionary clause. And The language of that statute was approved of by Robinson, Bradshaw, and Henson, about a 200-member law firm, one of the largest law firms in the state. And you remember when you finally did the original deed, there was a reversionary clause. See, this is really going to involve three things before we're all through with it. I mean, just if you're thinking it's Soul Road, it is, but something came up Friday, and I emailed you all about that, and something came up here in the meeting tonight that I discovered that I need to talk to you about. And the reason I need to talk to you about it is because I think you don't want to be coming back to an emergency meeting 2 weeks from now. So there's really a third issue that's developing. But when the town did the original deed, you wanted in there, you contained in there a reversionary clause. That's basically this, that if, when you deeded that property to Classical Academy CFA Inc., doing business as Lake Bluer Classical Academy, that if they didn't get the school built within 5 years from the date of recording of that deed, then it'd revert back to the town. And you didn't want them to get the land and sit on it for 99 years. You didn't want them to just turn around and sell the next property and go build a school in Charlotte. I mean, you wanted it for the purpose of getting a school built there. And that was, I thought, a very reasonable right of reversionary clause, because the way it was drafted, it said this: as soon as a certificate of occupancy is issued for that as a school, then any right of reversion just automatically ends as long as it happens within 5 years from the date of the recording of the deed. Well, that presents a window of opportunity all the way till August of 2018. And certainly they're going to think they're going to build a school between now and 2018. Again, Robinson, Bradshaw, and Henson didn't have a problem with that. But here's where all this has gotten to. It's not just about Robinson, Bradshaw, and Henson, a 200-member firm. There's also a 400-member firm, and I had to look them up. This firm was founded in 1844. How about that? 400 lawyers. They're in Boston, New York, And they have 400 lawyers, and they are looking at everything. And to show you how picky it is, I'm going to tell you a little humorous story that we're hopefully getting fixed, but it's really been more Tim Turner's responsibility to fix. But they want to know who's going to maintain NC Highway number 9. Well, North Carolina DOT is. Well, they said there's nothing of record to show they ever agreed to do that stretch of road.
Oh, friends.
And I'm sitting there telling, well, I'll sign an affidavit that, you know, they've maintained it all my life. And that road was officially made NC 9. You can look it up, 1938. It was a road even before then. That's when they designated NC 9. And obviously, you know, it goes all the way to Montreat, where it ends, and all the way to South Carolina border. And then once it hits South Carolina, it goes to Cherry Grove, all the way to the beach. But they want to see something on record saying NC DOT is going to agree to maintain that. And Tim Turner is saying, you ain't going to get it from me. Got to live with it. That's the kind of pickiness that you're seeing going on. So what happened? I'm going to show you the plat. Just pass it around. The plat that is recorded of this that you conveyed to them shows only right through the middle of what I marked with pencil stars a soil road. Now they're up there looking at it and saying, that's where the school's going to go, by the way. And they're saying, you got to remove it. That thing's showing on there, we don't want the town, if you notice, owns the property above that. We don't want the town to demand to be open that road. So one of your resolutions, and this was the first issue that came up, is they want you to sign a resolution and a quick claim deed agreeing to release any rights to that soil road shown that plat, because they want to put a school there and then have the town decide they want to open up that road. So that sounded kind of simple. So that you've got your package, a resolution, and a quick claim deed saying you're releasing your rights to that soil road, because that's where they want to put the school. Now, Friday, we got another issue that came up. This law firm, in 400-member law firm from 1844 up in Newark, New Jersey, does not like your reversionary clause. In fact, it's going to hang up this blunt with them. And their reasoning is this, and I've talked to them. Their reasoning is that they don't want to insure the bond of whatever it is of a $9 million loan when it's up to a third party like a building inspector, whether or not he may or may not, some subsequent time, issue a certificate of occupancy. So it's a deal breaker. Your reversionary clause is of record right now is a deal breaker on this loan. Now here's what they proposed, and it's not unreasonable. And there's a resolution I drafted, and it's already been approved of by statewide title, who's the title agent for Old Republic. It's already been approved of by a 400-member law firm. And I don't know if Chris made copies of it, so I'll come back to you. But what the proposal is this, and here's why it's not, I don't think, a big deal for them. They're saying this. They're saying they're not with that. They're saying, first of all, that $9 million deed of trust loan papers are not going on record August 27th until there is a signed construction contract already done in hand. So it's a simultaneous deal. There's a signed construction contract to build the school, and then the finance of the $9 million that goes on record pretty much, you know, together. So they're saying you're going to have the financing in place of record. You're going to have a signed construction contract of record. And better than that, there's a performance bond on the construction contract. So if they quit, go bankrupt, or whatever, it's going to get done. So what they're saying is they would like for you to consider changing your reversionary clause to this, so that when that mortgage for $9 million goes on record August 27th, that your reversionary clause is lifted at that point in time. Mm-hmm. So they don't have to worry about a third person making a decision like the building inspector, whether or not it's your certificate of occupancy.
I don't see any problem with
that. Okay, that's that one. Now something came up as I was sitting here in the meeting. Because I already read, I'm getting 30-page letters from these people. Got 2 30-page letters today. And so I can see this one coming. So let me tell you what I've anticipated. If you look at that map I just passed by, you will see a yellow highlighted section on the construction easement. Now, the way that plat is recorded, and I had assumed that this is on Highway 9. So I had assumed all along until last month that perhaps the entrance to the school is just coming off NC Highway 9, State Road. Well, I didn't get the construction plats until July, and I see that the entrance is off Island Creek Road. Now, if you look at that plat, you'll see that's a construction easement, and somebody I can anticipate is going to fuss and say, that's not part of what you conveyed to the school. They have got to own at least that yellow strip for the road, because that's where the road is into the school. Now, nobody's demanded it yet, but I can see that one coming. So I'd like for you to consider also agreeing that your mayor and clerk can also sign a deed for that little yellow strip for the road. Now, the plat says you've already been given them a construction easement. That's in the deed. But then the construction easement makes it clear that when the certificate of occupancy ends, the construction easement goes kind of automatically poof. But somebody's going to find this out and demand that you also convey the road itself where it's marked yellow.
But you haven't heard that problem yet.
I haven't heard that problem yet. I see it coming. Now, if you want to wait and call a special meeting and deal with it 2 weeks from now, that's fine.
I don't see any problem with that, other than I'd like to make sure we're protected, that we can use that road for our own access to the adjoining properties. There's someone who put that terminology in there. They own it, but we still have the rights to use it.
But you see, that's the catch. It doesn't go anywhere if you look at that yellow strip up from there to the school board.
Well, there's a little bit of land there that hasn't been conveyed yet.
There's a lot of land there that hasn't been conveyed.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. But you can access it. The way I'm looking at that plat, you can access that from Island Creek Road.
That's the access.
No, they're not talking about Island Creek Road.
They're coming out the other. That's Island Creek Road.
No. Now, let me show you. There's the plat.
You can talk about coming on the property.
It's on Island Creek.
Yeah. They're not talking about Island Creek Road, where you can access your property on the other side of the, this sort of splits the fire range. They're just talking about that yellow strip from Island Creek Road into their property.
Oh, agreed. But we've got access on this property. We use that road to get to that property.
That yellow strip's the only way in at this point.
Oh, is it?
Without building a new road.
But I don't mind conveying it to them, but protect the town's right to use it.
I got you.
With full ownership.
Well, then that's what you're going to do. Yeah, if it's a big issue, we'll let you have it.
They own the road. We just got to have rights to it.
You're willing to sign a resolution and a quick claim deed for that road, but not to then exclusively reserving it to the town the right to also use that little stretch of road for access to the rest of your property.
That's correct.
Okay. And But let's wait and see. Let's don't bring it to their attention. Let's wait and see if it comes up from their end.
If it comes up, then...
You would authorize the mayor and the clerk.
That's correct.
Okay. Right. So I can prepare a resolution that you're basically saying as to that. There are three resolutions. Well, the first one's in your package about the soil road.
We would wait to prepare that resolution until they ask for it.
That would require a special meeting.
We can approve tonight
the resolution.
The resolution
authorizing the mayor and the town clerk to sign a legal document conveying or quit claim deed conveying that road to them, as long as it reserves a right to the town to use that road too.
At any time, any place.
Yeah. And if they never bring it up, then you never execute that.
Right, but you got the paper there.
Right.
I'm fine with that. Just protect our rights.
So there are really three resolutions. The first one is in your package, the soil road. The second one got handed out to you, which deals with changing a reversionary clause to the recording of the $9 million mortgage, as long as the construction is specific, a bond, performance bond's in place.
I'm good with that.
Okay, and then the third one is that if they ask for a right of way, or not a right of way, but for a quick claim to you to right of easement on that road, as long as you convey, retain the rights to use it, you'll do it, but wait, hold off, do the documentation so they can.
Let Shannon give some input there.
I think it's a little more than the right to use. I think it's the right to use and develop in accordance to the way we feel like it needs to be developed and used. Because we've got an adopted plan for that entire tract. We cut out 34 acres. There were other uses on that that we wanted to use for the community in the future. And what we needed to do was to be able to access all those other sites across that. So I think we need to retain some sort of right.
That's what This is what is going to be the issue, is that shaded area from Island Creek Road to the property right there.
Right. And we understand that because we need to come off of that.
Right.
If school doesn't develop it later, then we would need.
Shaded area.
And Chris, you review it and maybe send copies to the mayor and council.
But we'll make
a motion to go ahead.
To approve it tonight.
That's correct.
In the event that it's necessary.
That's correct. And all we ask is that we get copies of it.
And I'll draft something up that says that.
Right.
So there are three resolutions that would suggest that y'all move and pass all three resolutions.
Chris, does this in any way involve the passage through the firing range?
Yes,
that is another issue?
It is geographically right through that. I don't believe that it puts the town in a detrimental position. And in fact, if our discussions around some grant support for remediating that go forward, we'll be right back to the council asking for the council to give the firing range tracks on either side of that to the school so that they qualify for a grant to remediate it. So,
we're
the first pass would be the little strip of land in the middle, and then the second approach would be to come back and do the same for the for the two firing range areas.
Mm-hmm. And that would save the town having to remediate, because they can't get the grants because they...
That's the strategy.
Right. And the road is really doesn't need remediation. It's off both sides of it, so there's no environmental problem.
I think the critical point, wherever we convey, we need to retain the right to use that so we can access the other thing. Chris, I sent you an email about that. I raised that issue last week. But it's very important. We retain the right to access
other
properties across that piece if we get to.
Okay.
Yeah,
it's similar to Rollin King selling, you know, the area in front of him, but retaining the right to be able to forever use that road, and even to improve it, as was proposed at one time when they had a housing development.
But when you say retain the right to use the road, I understand you're saying up to the school property line. Because again, if you look at that plat, the soil road kind of picks up from there and runs on through the property, and they've already asked you to give that up because that's where the building is going.
Yeah, I mean, the road dead ends at the building.
So when I assume you mean retain the right, you mean retain the right up until the school boundary line.
Yes.
That you already made it. Right.
Right.
Okay.
All right, can I have a motion on, this is the first one that's in G right now, 10G, okay. Is 14-08-12D. Do I have a motion to approve?
I'll make that. We'll go ahead, 14D. Mary.
Okay.
Go
ahead. Motion made by Bob, second by Mary Ann. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Okay. The next proposal has to do with the wording, the reversion wording, new, which is now 14-08-12E. Could I have a motion to approve that?
I'll make a motion to approve.
That's for Diane. Mm-hmm. That made a motion. Mm-hmm. Second by Mary Ann. Any further discussion? Probably not. All in favor, say aye.
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 Okay, so that one's unanimous too. The third is a resolution that we don't have as yet, but we'll call it 14-8-12F, and that's the one that talks about the road going in there and our continual use of it.
That's correct.
Do I hear a motion?
I'll make a motion that we approve that resolution.
Made by Bob.
Second.
Second by Diane. Any further discussion on it? All in favor, say aye.
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 I think we're square away.
Thank you.
Uh-huh. Thank you.
Can I ask you a question, Bob? When you call that resolution, what number did you call it? Because I think I've got a different number on my...
All right. In G, if you look on 10G, it's 14-08-12D.
Mine has 14D.
Huh?
Mine has 14D. That's the reason I was wondering which one you're...
It's
right there.
It should be 12D.
Okay, just the topographical area.
Yes.
Okay. Clarification made.
Good. Okay. We're okay?
And the first one was D. Okay. It's in the package.
Yeah. D, it was just misnumbered in the package.
D, and then F.
Okay. And then F. Okay. H. Discussion of IT support vendor analysis.
Okay. Well, I will not suffer you through a long conversation here. Mainly what I wanted to do was to inform the council that there's been a lot of work behind the scenes to evaluate our current level of technology and support and backup and risk. As I started getting in some proposals from other vendors, I wanted to look at, we've had a vendor providing us IT support, helped us support for a number of years. Their capabilities are starting to get outpaced by the market. They're a really small firm out of Forest City, and we've been less and less happy with the results. So I started looking and getting proposals from other firms. And I quickly realized that I was going to need some help in wading through all the options. I contracted with a technology consultant that did the legwork of evaluating these other firms objectively, independently, coming back to us with a very detailed analysis and recommendation of pros and cons. I would like to inform the council and get your approval to move forward. At this point, there's no price decisions, there's no contracts to look at. I'd like to basically narrow down the candidates to one firm that the consultant recommended that I agree. I've talked to their other municipalities that they are supporting. They seem very strong. They are up in the Asheville area. I'd like to narrow it down to that one firm and then start to negotiate with them what would the bottom line price and approach be for Lake Lure. We've got some rough estimates from them, but I'd like to refine that and see if I can get them to improve that and have a plan for which of our machines would be first to be upgraded to a different approach where we spend less per machine and we rent hardware and software more so than buying it and having to replace them all. So at this point, I just want to answer any questions or concerns that council may have about this strategy to move away from our current approach and start to work with a new vendor. Ultimately, I would expect to come back to council with a contract and a recommendation of an approach that'll take us into the next 5 to 10 years.
So, as I understand it, everything's basically going to the cloud. All the new technology.
That's the aim. We wouldn't go there immediately with all of our applications and all of our equipment, but we want to head there. That's where most corporations are going. That's where most larger municipalities are going. And you save money in the long run. You have more state-of-the-art protections against hackers and spam and things that we're starting to really get bogged down on. And each time we do that, it requires a call to our support staff, and they have to come, and the fires are coming more frequently than they can handle. So it's a cost play, but it's also a safety and a risk and a reliability factor that causes us to look toward more cloud-based solutions, more robust technical solutions, and more solutions that get everybody on town staff with the same machine, the same software, the same approach, rather than a one-off, oh, well, yours, you know, was purchased in 2006, and yours was purchased in 2009, and you're running this version, and you're running this version. That really drives up the support costs and the headaches.
Where is most of the cost coming from? I see the monthly cost. You think after the initial installation, and then it's just maintaining the cloud and that kind of thing. So
It's still a fair amount of support because they don't have people on site down here, so they're factoring in historically what our number of help desk calls are per day, per week, per month, and they're factoring that. What's the cost of that? How much of that can they do remotely with a help desk that's 24 hours? Mm-hmm. How often do they have to send somebody down here to fix a computer, fix a microphone, fix a server? Mm-hmm.
That's part of negotiate.
Yeah.
Those costs will be reduced if you have new equipment.
That's the expectation, and that's why I want to sharpen these numbers here, is that I think that we can anticipate in the proposal better performance from our hardware and from our software.
Plus, too, Microsoft does not support Windows XP anymore?
Yeah, most of our software is well out of support mode and out of date. And what we're faced with is our approach in the past to continue it is we have to buy a several hundred dollar copy of every machine's Office and email and things. And this switches us to a way where we just, for every person, you just pay a flat annual fee. And with that, they get all their software. And when the new version of the software comes out, guess what? They've got it. We don't have to then re-up and buy it when the old one is obsolete.
And how many machines would you be replacing with this?
Ultimately, when they're all done, would be 57, and we would do that over a number of years.
Oh, you wouldn't do it like 20?
Yes, over a number of years.
Okay.
Yeah, and that's what we would work out in terms of the strategy.
Okay.
Either questions, don't. Comments? Do I hear a motion?
I'll make a motion that we give Chris the authority to go ahead and go forward with proposal of one vendor.
I second it.
Motion made by Bob, seconded by Diane. Yeah. All in favor, say aye.
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 Thank you.
Okay, very good. Okay, now we go back to moving forward from, actually it was 8D. Moved into this place, which is adopt resolution number 13-08-12A and approve financing of public works truck and police vehicle. Yeah. We took that out of the consent agenda.
My question about that was, since we had $204,000 surplus out of the general fund last year, why would we want to finance it? Would it make more sense to pay for it rather than to finance those two vehicles?
We could. Sam, do you have an opinion on that from a cash flow standpoint?
So we're talking about an additional
$83,000.
$350
is what?
So that's basically
let me make sure I'm asking my question properly. If we have $204,000 surplus from our last fiscal year, But we've got to do something. We'll put that in reserves or, you know, it's going somewhere. I'm just wondering if it wouldn't make sense to take $83,350 of that to purchase these two vehicles rather than finance it and save those finance charges.
That's entirely up to you.
Yeah. The mechanics of it would be that surplus isn't sitting out in a checking account ready to be spent. It would go into the fund, the reserve balance, and then you would simply appropriate a withdrawal out of that for the amount that's needed to buy these. And basically, yeah, you're funding your own purchases rather than paying the 2.19% interest for 3 years.
My question would be, since we broke the piggy bank to do this year's dredging, and we don't have funds for next year's dredging, is it wise, while interest rates are low, to continue to finance the vehicles because our the amount that the town has financed has been minimal?
One thing I'd like to remember, consider, we still need to do something for our employees on incentive program.
Yeah. Well, there's plenty. You know, that still leaves a lot. But to the dredging, if you come down to the hydro fund, it was over by $290,000.
Right.
So you put, you know, that puts us right at $400,000 when you consider the $50,000 that we take from our boat permits and the other $50,000 from the hydro already. That's already budgeted in there. So that hits our number for next year.
A good chunk of the hydro surplus was we had planned to finish the road project, and it didn't get finished in the fiscal year. So a good chunk of that slid into this fiscal year, which will come out.
But budgeted, so
Okay.
Can you be coming to
I don't have a firm feeling one way or the other about this. I just thought it was something we should talk about, and
well, we need direction from
my personal preference would be to see, you know, pay for the vehicles rather than finance them if we can. But if it's, you know, if there's some compelling reason not to, then, you know, that's okay too.
What rates
are we looking at? Do we know?
Yeah, they bid 2.19%. So in general, we've been advising the last couple of years with rates so low to take advantage of the debt and keep your fund balances high and healthy because of that.
Okay, let's, if that seemed to be the plan, is it okay, John?
I really don't care one way or other. I just thought it just kind of seemed obvious to me that was something that we should consider.
Chris, what do you think? You prefer to borrow it versus?
I would, because we've already got some other vehicles on that program. It's a 3-year, fairly quick time frame. And I would, you know, rates are going to go up, and so I would take advantage of these opportunities while we have them.
Okay, I'll make a motion then that we go ahead and fund it as requested.
Okay, motion made by Bob. Second?
I'll second.
Second by John. All in favor, say aye.
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 It's unanimous? Okay. The next thing I had here was a discussion of the resolution modifying, and that was yours, Chris. You've already covered that, right?
Yep, it's already done.
Okay, yes. That one's done. So we move to, I guess,
the
10M, which is John's, about the polling places.
Yeah, we had, when I had talked with Debbie Bedford, she had sounded like there was at least a reasonable chance that we might could get some early voting done in this building or set up for this building, and it looked like we didn't make the cut this year, but I would just like to go ahead now, well in advance of the Board of Elections next meeting, and ask that they reconsider setting up an early voting polling place here in Town Hall, because the folks on this end are on the absolute end of the county, and even go down to Green Hill Store, that's fine if you go into Rutherford anyway, but short of that, I think that the more opportunities that we can help our local citizens have to make it easy on the vote, we should do it. So I'm just, my motion would be that we would send another letter similar to the last one to the Board of Elections asking that they make Town Hall an early voting stop.
Okay.
Sounds good. I'll second it.
Motion made by John, second by Bob. Any further discussion? Hearing none, all in favor, say aye.
Aye.
And it's unanimous. And item number 11. Do I hear a motion?
I'll make a motion to adjourn.
It's all unanimous. Thank you. Thank you all for coming and staying.